have it. Its contents may be a little different than some. Mine is not nearly as vintage and cool as the ones on the video. Its weight may be more or less than the person next to you, but we all have it. Baggage. Those things in our past that remind us of who we think we are, remind us of that place and time we'd rather just avoid. We try to avoid at just about any cost. Today we begin a series called Home, talking about getting to a new place. A place of peace and security and significance. A place where we know exactly who we are and to whom we belong. A place where we know that we have value. Over the next couple of weeks leading into the holidays, which can be a very mixed bag. See you later, kids. Sorry, it's my... So over the next couple of weeks, leading into the holidays, which can be a really mixed bag, right, when it comes to the idea of home, we are talking about finding a true home as part of God's family. So let's pray. God, whatever walls we have, whatever shells we have built, whatever places we try to hide, I pray that you would, in your spirit, would penetrate, would tear down the walls, would break into the shell, would find us in our hiding places, that we might come to a place of openness and honesty before you. God, I pray that we'd be safe here in this place. Safe with you. Safe with your family. Amen. So we all have this certain default way of looking at things. Events in our past that tends to reveal the fact that because of a brokenness deep back in our family lines, we behave much like orphans, spiritual orphans. And if we think about what that means for us, like spiritual orphans never quite feel at home anywhere. We tend to not feel good enough. We tend to question whether our own, we have any personal value. Deep down, we all behave as if we are born without a home, spiritual orphans. This actually goes way, way back to the very beginning of the story, our story. In Genesis 3, it says that when Adam and Eve, when they heard the sound of God strolling in the garden in the evening breeze, the man and his wife hid in the trees of the garden, hid from God. God called to the man, "Where are you?" And Adam said, "I heard you in the garden and I was afraid because I was naked and I hid." This is the beginning. It's the beginning of a break in relationship, of a brokenness, of a dysfunction that starts to play itself out over and over again between Adam and Eve, between Adam and Eve and God, between Cain and Abel, their sons, who should feel like there's enough. But they compete with one another. When one succeeds, the other can't cope, flies off the handle, kills his brother, runs away, more hiding, more dysfunction, more running, until eventually the story leads up to human beings united not in who they are, and united to find their identity not in who they are and who God created them to be, but in what they can accomplish together in their success or their achievement of building a tower and becoming like God, right? There's this deep rift that forms between God and humans with each other. And the thing is that we don't actually experience this rift more often than not. We don't experience this as a relational void, as a disconnection necessarily. That's not its first and primary way of experiencing this void. We tend to feel the void, the hole in our lives or in our soul as a lack of, more often than not, a lack of success or achievement or personal value. We tend to experience it as if you and I, all of us, are just one failure away from everyone we know leaving us or abandoning us. So that we have to work more, work harder, be sure that we achieve more. Because we cannot fail, because if we do, everyone might leave us. We might be all alone. I might have no value. The story continues in our story, in the biblical story with Moses. Moses ends up an orphan because, you know, at that time, mothers had to either, you know, give up their children to, you know, the whims of fate or the river, or their sons were killed. And so Moses ends up an orphan. He gets taken in by the Pharaoh, saying he ends up living as an orphan in Pharaoh's household. And this orphan, through a weird, you know, turn of events, ends up leading the orphaned people of Israel to a place of home in the promised land. And the Exodus story is so big for this reason. It's so big in the story, in the history, in the ethos of the Israel people, of the Hebrew people, because it's the process by which they go from being orphans, from being nothing, not a people, just slaves to another nation, to being a nation, to being a people, to being God's people, and to having a place to call home. That's our journey too. The story of the Exodus plays itself out over and over, and that's our journey over these next couple of weeks. And my task today, not as happy as Chris's next week, but my task is to define reality. It's a little heavy, but it's real. To shed some light on the junk that we store away in our trunks that keep us from finding. I knew that would get a giggle. Yeah. Lighten it up a little. It's junk in our trunks. To shed some light on all that we store away that keeps us from finding home, that keeps us from finding home in God's family. We all have stuff in there. Generally try to keep it tight, shut tight, not let others see. But my hope is that if I share a little of my own, share a little of what's in my trunk or bag, you'll be able to admit some of your own. You'll be able to be honest about some of your own, some of the junk that keeps you acting like a spiritual orphan. Keep coming back over and over again to these tendencies that we have as spiritual orphans. All right, fair enough. I went deep. It actually did come from a trunk in my basement that I haven't opened in years. So I dug deep for this. What was I going to, okay, let's see here. I got a lot of stuff in here. Let's see how much time we got. All right, so this one, this I found, it's a plaque. And you might think it's, you know, makes me feel very proud. But this one in particular comes with a lot of mixed emotion. This one is the Most Improved Wrestler Award for the 89-90 season at Porter Central Middle School. And when I look at this, I mean, you might think, hey, that's great, that's nice. You know, but when I look at this, I kind of see, I don't really see these words. I see, dear Lord, thank God you didn't talk like you did last year. Because this is my 7th grade year. In 6th grade, I won 0 matches. Zero. And only my last match of the season did I not get pinned. So when I look at this, I see, you know, like, if I had won once, even twice in 7th grade, they probably still would have given me this award. You know, like, dear Lord, thank you for getting a little bit better. That's what I see. Now, the truth is, I actually, you know, I set a win record my 7th grade year, but I don't see that. I see I see the, you were horrible in sixth grade. Thanks for getting better. You know, it's like, that's the feedback I see. I get defensive when I see that plaque. Like, and that's one of our tendencies as spiritual orphans, is to have a hard time with feedback, to not hear or to filter even kind, loving, encouraging words into negative feedback. I give messages quite a bit, right? You know, every other week, not as much as some pastors. Thank goodness, it's nice. But I still get given quite a few over the last 10 years. And, you know, like feedback mostly, you know, comes in the form, hey, good job, way to go, which means, hey, thanks for not, you know, like, falling all over yourself. Like, that's, those are the things I hear. But then once in a while, I put my heart and my soul into something. I take a big risk, you know, like maybe suggesting to everyone to maybe, you know, do something crazy, like not watch the Super Bowl. And the feedback comes in. And man, is it negative. And my tendency is to think, I just want to run away. I just want to hide. I can't really step out and take a risk with these people. That's what I feel. All the challenge. Now, most of it was really, if I really am honest, probably joking. You guys are like, crazy, you know, crazy man doesn't like sports ball and all those sorts of things. The truth is that when feedback comes our way, we all have a hard time. Part of our feeling of not having an identity that's secure, or being sort of spiritual orphans, means that feedback that comes our way gets filtered through that lens. And we have a hard time with it. Maybe not you. I don't know. Maybe you're different. And when that negative email comes, or when that thing, you just read through it and think, whatever, you know. Me, I gotta see who sent it, and I gotta like, okay, dude, I know that person a little bit. I gotta get my, you know, thick skin on or something like that. Just one of our tendencies as spiritual orphans: the inability to receive feedback, even positive feedback. We don't think we're good enough, and so we try to look for the hidden messages. Let's do another one. This one's to prove that I at one time did care about sports ball. She'd never seen it before. My wife has never seen this before. Told you I dug deep. This is a Nebraska Cornhusker, you know, stuffed doll, which I forgot that I had. But at one point in time, after my parents were divorced when I was young, my dad lived in Nebraska for a few years and tried, you know, like when we were out there, we got gifts, you know, I mean, we got things. We went to a Cornhusker game, and I got you know, Husker hankies and other things in there. I thought this would be the most fun to hold up here because it's kind of weird. But to me, when I look at that, you might think, oh, what a cute little thing from your childhood. When I look at that, I see the dysfunction of my family growing up. I see and experience all these emotions, you know, that I experience growing up, that and these messages that I have that carry, that brokenness is just normal. That's normal life. I thought everyone lived this way, where, you know, parents are five states away and they can't be in the same room together, and being alone or feeling alone is just normal, or that I'm not allowed to admit things are not right or somehow wrong because of the touchiness of relationships in my family, and someone might fly off the handle, so I gotta just shut up and pretend things are okay, or I've gotta hide things from one parent, or when I have a good time here, this was a gift from my dad, but when I got home to my regular house, it went in the closet. That's why it's still there, because it just got stuck in a box somewhere, because I can't show this to my mom because she can't experience gifts from my dad that way. Like, I just thought all that was normal. Maybe for you, you know, your childhood wasn't like that, but for some reason, I mean, somehow or ways, we get all these messages about what family is like, or what fathers are like, what mothers are like, you know, or like, or, and we translate them onto God. And so we think, you know, God might just abandon me like my real parent did, or no, God is cheap, or that God is not generous, or I'm not worthy of love, or all these messages that come from how we grow up, and we just kind of project them on God. And just to be clear, this is not a message where I'm trying to say, look back at your family history and blame everything that's wrong with you on your parents. It's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that somehow being bad at wrestling in sixth grade, or that, you know, my parents' divorce somehow is the reason why I'm a spiritual orphan. That's not it. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying every single one of us has the seeds from way, way back. We are born with the seeds of disconnection and brokenness, just waiting for the right fuel, the right water, the right light, the right conditions. And if you haven't experienced those things yet, or these, you know, like, then you're just, you know, some point in time, it's probably going to rear its head, these tendencies of feeling like an orphan. Funny. We all have these seeds of brokenness with us from the very, very beginning. All right? The scriptures are very clear on this. So it's not these things that I'm bringing out of my case that made me. These are just things that shed light on what was already there. Let me read from Ephesians just to kind of get us in this mindset. It says, in Ephesians 2, Paul says that it wasn't so long ago that we were mired in our old stagnant life of sin. We all were. We all share that common original sort of brokenness of life. You let the world, which doesn't know the first thing about living, tell you how to live. You filled your lungs with polluted unbelief and then exhaled disobedience. We all did it. All of us doing what we felt like doing when we felt like doing it. All of us in the same boat. So if you identify with anything I share today, what I brought out or what I'm going to bring out, I'm sorry to say, sorry to break it to you, you're just normal. You're normal. You're the same as all the rest of us. You're in the same boat as all the rest of us. The only real question is whether or not we'll open up to each other and be honest, open up to God and be honest, open up to ourselves and be honest with ourselves. Be honest about it. All right, let's see, what else do I have in here? This is a diploma. The only piece of paper that I actually have in my possession to prove that I have any education at all. Here it says Andrew Gordon Keith Draw has completed the course of study prescribed by the Board of Education for graduation as awarded this diploma. Now, I have completed all the requirements and everything for an undergraduate degree in construction management, but due to, you know, circumstances not necessarily beyond my control, but, you know, clerical laziness and things like that, the piece of paper hasn't come my way yet. And then, you know, actually haven't finish my last semester in seminary because I was too busy planting this church. You know, God made me a certain way. God wired me up to be an apostle, right? Much more concerned with starting things, with pioneering, with taking new ground, a lot less concerned with the details that lead to a piece of paper hanging on your wall. But that doesn't mean that when I see someone else's seminary degree hanging in their office, thank goodness Chris doesn't put his up, but when I see, you know, someone else like with their pictures of walking with their robes on and things like that, which, you know, I've never done that, you know, besides high school. I've done everything I need to do for my undergraduate degree, but I didn't. When I see people who do those things and have those things, I get self-defensive. I get to the point where I have this really unhealthy need to prove how much I know, to be the smartest person in the room, to be always right. You didn't know where this all came from, right? You just thought that was, you know, I'm letting you in to some of my dysfunction. part of who I am. We, as spiritual orphans, we have a hard time. We have an inability to love others who are different from us. For me, it's people who are, you know, detail-oriented, who've taken all the steps and done everything they need to do, and then, you know, I feel bad because I have it. Or maybe for you, it's people who differ from you politically. Do you walk down the street and see someone with that particular sign in there, and you think, oh, well, they're probably a reasonable person. Perhaps we should sit down over coffee and discuss our different views because, you know, I have no problem thinking they're okay or loving them. No, right? I mean, we jump to the, oh my, how could they? They are so dead wrong. They must be idiots. Right? Come on now. Because we're not secure in our own identity, we have a need to be on the right side, to think we're right, because we find our identity in that. We have an inability to love others who are different from us because it has an effect. If someone who is different than us is still okay, then if I think differently, am I okay? Am I still, like, it affects our identity. See what I mean? Maybe this doesn't apply to any of you guys. I don't know, but let's keep going. All right. These are fun. So these are, I dug into my, I have all my, you know, because it definitely matters still. But I have all my accomplishments apparently in a box labeled with the grade and everything I found. Yeah, here's a first place medal from Harper Creek. Here's a first place medal from my home tournament in Portage Central. These are seventh grade, by the way. You know, I went from nothing to Michigan school band. And how did that get in there? First place medal from Forest Hills, you know, right around the corner. And then here's another plaque. This one is the Colt Award, which is kind of a big deal because all the other, like, awards and things like that in our wrestling team were voted on by the other members of the team. So I wasn't very popular, obviously. But the coaches like me because this is the only one the coaches give out for, like, sportsmanship or all around whatever. But I kept all these things. I have a whole lot more medals and things like that. I don't know if you keep them too, but I have a feeling that you're with me in this tendency to be happy or only content based on how well our most recent performance went. I can't tell you how high and how low to how high my mood or my happiness or my contentment would swing as a kid between if I won that tournament on the weekend or if I won or if I lost. My identity was so wrapped up in whether or not I did well at wrestling. You can't even imagine. To the point where the very last tournament, the very last, like, individual moment on the mat as a senior in high school, it was long before I thought it would be. I was sure that, you know, after having been extremely successful at Portage Central, which is a very strong wrestling team, a very, very strong wrestling conference, and I'd done well and been successful, and I moved to this little podunk, you know, Class B school, you know, like, of course I was going to go to state. I mean, my goodness, of course I would. Of course I'd place at state. Then all of a sudden, I struggled. My first match in the regional tournament against a nobody. Winning. I've watched the video so many times, not recently, but I'm at 6 minutes, which is the end of a wrestling match. I'm winning. Of course, they didn't start the top for the clock for the last period, and so the last period went, instead of, you know, 2 minutes, it went 3.5. And somewhere around 3 minutes into that last period, the guy escaped, took me down, ended up winning. And my identity was so rocked. My world was so rocked that I had to hide. I had to run. I had to get out of there. I was like, I was literally like just holding my, I was crying, but holding like, holding in the massive, like complete, you know, dry heaves, throwing, like I was, all of that was about to come out and I just had to run. And the direction I ran happened to lead to doors that had like these locks on them. It was in the school, you know, like you couldn't get out. And so the only thing to be done was to take the trash can right there and throw it through the floor-to-ceiling glass window so that I could get out. I had to get out. I had to run. I had to hide. It was just one of the times in my life where this tendency as a as an orphan, as a spiritual orphan, to be so rocked by, you know, our performance, our achievement, our view of success. To feel like I couldn't possibly have value anymore or worth anymore because I failed. I'm sure it's never happened to you. I got some other things in here. Maybe time for one more. Where'd they go? Oh, yeah, here we go. Now, I know you all know I've never been in the service, so that's not what these are. As you know, these are from stupid kids going to an Army Navy store, and you know where they'll engrave dog tags for you. I'm looking at these for the first time. They have my name spelled right. This is from a cross country team, where because cross country wasn't necessarily cool, we tried extra, extra hard to be cool and just for us to, you know, to be, at least we thought we were cool. And so we, you know, we kind of had this really, we really got up to no good. And although it wasn't normally an idea, I was usually leading the charge and doing, you know, the things that were required to be up to no good or to have ruthless posse on your dog tags. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, so I was trying to belong. You know, like I had no, by the time high school rolled around, I spent so much time in wrestling. I didn't play an instrument or wasn't in a, like, a, you know, the garage grunge band like some of the cool guys were. And so on the cross country team, we were at least kind of quirky cool, you know, and we did really, really stupid things that other kids thought were kind of cool. And I was trying to belong. I was trying to have some sort of bond with other human beings. And so I did whatever was necessary. Did all the wrong things. And this is a tendency we have as spiritual orphans. Is we have a difficulty bonding with others because we don't see ourselves as valuable to a relationship. And so we think the only way people could possibly want to be with us or that form that bond is if we, you know, is if we prove ourselves constantly. If we do all the wrong things for all the wrong reasons, right, to try to belong, to form this bond with other human beings. I mean, how have you ever in your life done something you regretted to try to be friends with someone, to try to save that particular relationship that was doomed anyways? Only me? I've done that a lot. Orphans have a difficult time bonding with others. It's just one of our tendencies as spiritual orphans. But you know, it doesn't have to be that way. Slowly, over time, I've given up. There's a reason why these things are packed away in a trunk and forgotten about for years. Slowly, over time, I've given up these tendencies. I've given up my sense, finding my identity in the things I accomplish or the things I have or the things that, you know, I've done or any of that. And I find it in some place different. Let me read you John 1. The Gospel of John says that he came, Jesus came to his own people. And even they rejected him. But to all who believed him and accepted him, he gave the right to become children of God. They are reborn, not by a physical birth resulting from human passion or plan, but a birth that comes from God. We are given the right to become children of God. And Paul puts it this way in Romans 8. It says, "For all who are led by the Spirit are children of God. So you have not received a spirit that makes you fearful slaves. Instead, you received God's Spirit when he adopted you as his own children. Now we call him Abba, Father." Daddy. And you know, for me, the hope of home is not looking back to some idealized, you know, memory. My childhood was far too, you know, real. I mean, my parents were good people. They're just trying to, you know, they're just trying to make the best of it. We didn't have it all that bad, really. But there's no moment, really, that I wish to return to. Maybe there is for you, but I just want to be clear. Like, that's not what this is about. It's not what this is about. It's about being adopted into God's family, getting to the point where we can call God Abba, Father, Daddy. Like that level of closeness. And I don't know if that's hard or easy, or if the gender issues get to you, like do to me sometimes. But here's the thing. When I grew up in church, all I ever heard was the these and the thous and the God is big and powerful and angry sometimes and all those sorts of things. And I very, very rarely got the image of God as a loving parent, willing to grab you close enough so that you feel comfortable saying, "Daddy, Mommy," that sort of closeness. But the hope of home in God's family is real. It's not a looking back. It's a looking forward. The people of Israel, there were some that said, "Hey, let's just go back to Egypt. It wasn't that bad there," right? But that's not what they did, and that's not where God was leading them. He was leading them to a promised land, a new place. Listen to this in Deuteronomy. "For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, flowing with streams, pools of water, with fountains and springs that gush out of valleys and hills. It is a land of wheat and barley, of grapevines, fig trees, pomegranates, of olive oil and honey. It's a land where food is plentiful and nothing is lacking. It's a land where iron is as common as stone and copper is abundant in the hills. When you have eaten your fill, be sure to praise the Lord your God for the good land he is giving you." And that sounds pretty good. Pretty good. But, you know, that's for the people of Israel way back then. And, you know, iron as common as stones, probably not that much good to us or sound all that great. Copper in them hills down there is, I mean, who really cares, right? But maybe if we changed it, just a little bit and kind of thought through what it might mean for us to have that same sort of hope of a good home, of a place that not just good, not just okay, right? But amazing, abundant, nothing is lacking. Maybe it would be something more like, "The Lord is bringing you into a good land, and you shall eat and be full, and you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land he is giving you, a land of sandy beaches, of sunsets and lake houses, a land of quiet rivers, of canoes and rope swings." I want to tell you this morning that you can go home. Next week, we're going to talk a little more about coming home, about finding home. But to get there, we've got to go through this week. We've got to go through putting your baggage down. Coming to a place where you just drop it and walk away. You might need to open up and admit, you know, I need to open up that trunk that you've been trying to hide for so long. Because you might need help. You might have tucked that away so far, so deep, as a part of who you are, that you're going to need someone's help to wrench it out of there and walk away from it. So I hope you'll come back next week. And if you're not going to be around next week, then get with Chris or I. And let, because this message is not meant to stand alone. Not meant to leave you here. The hope of home is real. Part of our identity as God's family is this meal, this symbol, this gift that we share every week. We say that, you know, as we do this, as often as we do this, we remember, you know, what Jesus said to his disciples when he was around there. He took the bread and he broke it and he said, "This is my body. It's the reason we are given the right to become children of God, to be adopted into God's family." So whenever you do it and remember that. Celebrate that Jesus is present with us. Do it as a declaration of who you are and to whom you belong. You know, and after the meal was over that night, he took the cup and he passed it and he said, "This is a new covenant," which would have been a much bigger deal to them, I think, than it is to us. We've grown kind of used to this act of pouring the juice into the cup and saying, "It's a new covenant." But if you read back in the story of the first covenant and what God had Abraham do, like slicing bulls in half, and it was very involved, very bloody, very, you know, a little bit grotesque. It was not just this is a new covenant. Pour a little juice in a cup. And of course, Jesus is saying, "This is a new covenant in my blood," which represents the very bloody, very involved act of sacrifice of Jesus on the cross. But it's the way. It's our way into the family. It's the way we get to go home, if you will. It's the new covenant. Jesus is the way. And so as we share this, as we pass the bread and you break a chunk and you say these words to each other, "This is the body of Christ given for you," and "This is the blood of Christ shed for you," or "This is the cup of blessing," or, you know, whatever words you want to say, I invite you to participate in this meal as God's family. Let it speak identity to you this morning. Let it remind you who you are, that you are beloved. Because you're you. Not because of what you've done,
what you've accomplished or not accomplished. You are beloved because you're you. Let it remind you who you are and to whom you belong. Let's say thanks. God, if only it were as simple as it sounds on a Sunday morning to just drop all our baggage and come home. We know it's not. And so may this just be a trigger. May this just be a single baby step towards us beginning the process of running to you, running to your arms, running home. Even if we're not there just yet. Thank you for this gift that reminds us who we are. Reminds us the family to which we belong. Amen.